Once again, I would like to welcome you to the Windows HPC Server Development, the WCF application model. Now, without any further delay, I would like to turn today's live meeting over to your first presenter, Wenming Ye. Wenming, you now have the floor.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Wenming Ye, and I am a technical evangelist at Microsoft. Welcome to my Windows HPC 2008 session. Our topic today is on the HPC New Application Scenarios, or the WCF Broker Architecture on the Windows 2008 Server. And we have two objectives and two takeaways for this session. So the first objective is to learn about the WCF programming model for HPC applications. And then the second one is to understand the architecture and manageability of the WCF broker infrastructure. The two key takeaways are, what is a WCF programming model, why we need it, and how it all works. And the second one is, HPC Server 2008 delivers 3S plus 1M for the HPC plus WCF applications. The three S's are stable, scalable, secure, and the 1M is for manageability. So first, let's review what industries use HPC and why. Supercomputing is becoming an integrated part of scientific and engineering research and development. Traditionally, supercomputing has always been utilized by industries like automobile engineering, aerospace, and oil and gas for many years, and these industries use HPC for simulating experiments that are cost prohibitive. And now it is starting to help pharmaceutical and financial services companies to become more economically competitive. So what are some of the problems that these industries are trying to solve? They're trying to solve or compute large-scale time complexity problems. Time in this case is measured in CPU seconds, while space is the amount of RAM or hard drive space you have. A cluster can distribute these very large problems across a thousand of ordinary servers to make a large-scale problem fit. So some of these problems are nano simulations, medical, fusion, geoscience, surface flow for oil and gas, and CFD or computational fluid dynamics, or other type of optimization code. And essentially, most of these problems are solving a set or many sets of linear equations. So the traditional HPC message parsing library is what these linear solvers are often based on, and they require low latency, high bandwidth, non-interactive, and they're usually batch, and they could run for months at a time. And most of the time in real-world applications, they're difficult to scale. And we have covered this topic in my previous webcast on Microsoft MPI and SDK enhancements. So another class of parallel problems are called embarrassingly parallel or stateless. So some of the examples are risk management, which is very important at this time, ray tracing, Monte Carlo simulations or random walk type of simulations, and image processing, blast, search, or genetic algorithms, or any type of other interactive applications that would require this. And this leads our topic today on the SOA programming model, or service-oriented architecture. So these type of problems, once again, are interactive and they're usually stateless. Microsoft's response to the SOA or web services challenge is the Indigo.net framework, or what I call the Windows Communications Foundation. I think I'm having a little trouble moving the slide. One second. Okay. So, okay, we're back to where we are. So on this slide, we talked about the large-scale time complexity problems, which are using linear solvers, and they usually use message passing libraries. And the second one is the embarrassingly parallel, or stateless. And the solution here is to use the SOA programming model. And now let's look at a demo. If you missed my presentation last time on 9/11, let's look at a very quick demo here. So this demo shows how we can submit a job to the traditional HPC job to the Windows Server cluster using the Job Management Console. So here we're looking at the Cluster Management Console for Windows 2008 HPC Server. And the two important parts here is the node management functionality and the job management functionality. So what we're trying to do right now is to create a new job and submit that. So what I'm going to run is a matrix solving operation. So we're going to solve a matrix with 10,000, actually 100,000 by 100,000, by solving the AX equals B equation. And usually, even 5 years ago, it would take a long time and a really big supercomputer to compute. Now you can actually do it with a cluster with only a couple of nodes. So let me click on the job console. And here you can see that these are all the jobs that are statuses. So the active jobs, there's currently no active jobs, and these are the finished jobs that I have run this morning. So the easiest way to run a job is to just simply copy a job that you have already that already existed. So we're going to do a copy, and we'll show you what's in here. So under the job detail, it shows you the name of the job and the task which it contains. So here's a task list. So for traditional MPI applications, you only usually only have one task in here. And if we double click on that, you'll see that I'm running MPI exec minus MP, which I'm requesting 12 resources, or in this case, 12 cores to run the application. And the minus N 100,000 is the argument to the traditional command line executable. And I can just go ahead and save that and submit that to the job scheduler. So you'll see in the lower right-hand corner, it will say the job has been submitted to the cluster. So let's look at the node management tool. And under heat map, you can see it's running at full throttle. And the communication is running about 2 megabytes per second on the purple line. And the CPU is going at about 90%, utilizing about 90% of the CPU on using three computational nodes. So this is how to submit a traditional job, and usually you have just one task. So let's switch back to the slides. So let me go over what Windows Foundation class, Windows Communication Foundation class first, because our architecture is based on that. Before we go into the broader WCF architecture for the 2008 HPC server. But the Windows Communication Foundation gives the developer a unified programming model for all their communication needs within an application. So previously, as we are developers, if we want to want to communicate between two pieces of software, usually a server or a client server model or a sender receiver model, you will have to choose a programming technology such as TCP/IP or UDP, could be RPC, or in the Microsoft world, you could be using MSMQ or Microsoft Message Queue, or it could be web services, which are new. The problem with this approach is that you're tied very tightly to a specific communications technology, and each of these communication technologies have their own issues. And it's also very difficult for applications that have already been coded with these older technologies to convert and talk to the newer programming models. So Windows Communications Foundation provides the unified programming model for and hides all the details, such as transport encoding handshakes and other things. And all you have to do is really to specify a service contract. And the contract specifies what operations you're running, that our service, and then you can also provide an implementation once that interface is designed. So in addition, you can specify data contracts, such as the data contract can be passed as a parameter or return value. It's very essentially a technology that you can define the methods, a remote method, and then the WCF Windows Communication Foundation will generate the proxy stubs for you, so you can invoke these remote methods. Here's a higher level overview of the WCF architecture. At the top, it is your code, and usually you would be developing this under Microsoft Visual Studio. And then the WCF service uses an address. It could be just like HTTP, localhost, and some port. And then, of course, you will need a binding. A binding is how the service determines how the service communicates, and finally a contract that specifies the actual communication. So. Once the message enters the system, it will go through the transport stack service it communicates on, whether it's HTTP or TCP/IP, and then it will use an encoder. It could be a text encoder or XML encoder, or it could be a custom binary encoder. And then what kind of security and service it requires, and any other communication requirement that you put on top of that. Or it could be a custom additional requirements operations in your code. And when a message goes in, it will pass through each of these transports and finally reach your source code. Once we have a service contract, we need to create an endpoint. And the endpoint consists of three pieces of information. And this is what I call the ABCs of an endpoint. The A stands for the address, and which is where the service lives. And the B stands for binding, and specifies how you want to communicate and what protocol you want to use. And finally, the last component of an endpoint is the contract of which the service contract we discussed earlier, or the operational and data contract. So now we're back to the same picture that we started with, but this time with multiple instances of web services. For embarrassingly parallel applications, Windows 2008 Server gives you a very easy way to scale your embarrassingly parallel application to a cluster. So let's review what the traditional HPC architecture looks like. So it is really simple. It consists of two parts, a head node with a job scheduler, which allocates the resources for you, and the farm of computational nodes in the background. This is a very simple model. All you have to do is have a user submit a job, and then the scheduler allocates the resources on the back end, and the cluster finishes the job and usually receive error messages via files or any files that your MPI program could write out. So let's think about what it would actually take for us to add WCF communication within this model. So the first thing we're going to need is obviously the service container or node service manager on the compute node. Do you need a way to start up? You need a way to start up the computational nodes and the WCF services on them. And the second thing we're going to need is a endpoint proxy for which the user application or client application that can connect to as a communication endpoint. So this is the ABC we talked about earlier, address binding contract, and that must be handed over or given to the client application so that it can connect. And third, a broker that does load balancing on the WCF web service on the compute node. So finally, and you also need service management because we have a lot of computational nodes, not just one web service. So we need a way to manage these web services running in the back end. And the scheduler must be WCF aware. So the scheduler must be able to provide users with the ability to discover, receive communication endpoints, and other things. So these four items have already been implemented by the product team for Windows 2008 HPC server. So let's look at what the new architecture looks like by adding these components. So now this is the new architecture diagram, and this is probably, I would say, the most important slide on this presentation. So the goal is to allow your client to transparently submit a web service call to the computational node. Here are the steps. First, the client creates a session. We will show the code in a minute. I will do a demo, and you will get to see that. And then the job scheduler, which is a WCF broker aware, and it has to start two jobs here. One is that it has to start the WCF broker process. Usually it's on the head node. And then it has to go to all the computational nodes and tell the web services and start the service that the user has requested on all these node resources that it wants to run. And so once the computational nodes have started their web services, these web services will contact the WCF broker. And the third thing that happens here is that the WCF broker, or the proxy in this case, tells the job scheduler to give the client the communication endpoint. Of course, the communication endpoint is on WCF broker itself, since the WCF broker is the guy that the compute nodes have been talking to. So the final step here is that the client got the endpoint from the job scheduler, and now it can talk to WCF broker via the given endpoint. So once this process is complete, the client no longer needs to talk to the scheduler anymore. And all the resource management and growth and shrink type of work will be intelligently done by the WCF broker itself without going through the job scheduler. So let's look at a quick demo. I'm going to switch back to the desktop. So this is a back to the cluster management tool. And as we run the demo, we'll see what happens, what actually happens on the cluster tool, and we can show you the jobs that are running on here once we start the demo. So this demo is on a protein folding application. So these things are essentially embarrassingly parallel. So first, let me list them into details, and I can tell it to fit. So here's the application we're going to run. So this is on my desktop computer, and the cluster is actually somewhere on the network. This is my client application. So once I press play, the play button, and it's going to try to compute the lowest energy requirement for this protein. Protein folding is essentially taking a bunch of amino acids and arrange the lowest energy state, and then that determines what these proteins look like in terms of a shape. And these could essentially take billions, I think hundreds of billions even, hundreds of billions of computation. To simulate and find out. So as I am running this application, we can see that the cluster tool has two jobs here. One is the WCF broker tool, WCF broker job, which is where the client is connecting to. And the other one is the actual services. Apparently, they all finished by now. And these are the back-end computational work, or the jobs being submitted to the web services on the back computational node. So as you can see, that the computation has already finished. And we're going to go back to the application and try to run it one more time. I'll close it, and I'll run it one more time here, so that I can show you the clustering tool a bit better. So here's the cluster, and let's look at the actual node management. Yes, you can see there's WCF calls coming in. And the way you configure this application is actually fairly straightforward. One of the diagnostic tools that shows you the SOA application was actually configured. So if we run one of these services and on across all nodes, you will see all the actual services are available on these nodes. So we'll take a look at one of the computational nodes. So here are some of the services that have been registered. Service one, which is our protein voting application. So what you do to deploy a service, it takes two steps. One is that you need the web services deployed on all the clusters by copying the DLL over, and the other thing you have to do is to register the service. Registering service involves just adding an XML file in the registration directory of the Windows HPC pack. And we'll show you that in a second. So this concludes this quick demo, and apparently the protein voting demo has finished. Let me go ahead and close this. And get back to the slides. So here is a list of solution benefits. So while building an application as a developer wants to have a loop and call method. So essentially you want to say for I equals 1 to 100 and farm out all the service calls, and I don't really care what happens in terms of communication. I just want to make a message call, and it automatically farms out. And the HPC SOA model abstract these distributed computing with asynchronous calls within a loop for you to distribute the actual compute work. So while running an application, a user wants sub-second requests. So they want to do very rapid requests to a bunch of web services, and they want it to do it very efficiently. MPI, or the traditional architecture, cannot do that because it takes a long time to just start all the processes on all the nodes. But for WCF services, they're loaded in memory, so thus they can respond to lots of requests very quickly. So WCF brokers also dynamically allocates resources automatically for you. If you need more servers, it can increase it, and if you need less resources, it will decrease it for you. It will manage that intelligently. And finally, as a user, you also want to be able to monitor the jobs that are running. As you can see, that as I was running the protein voting application, it runs on a remote server, and I would like to find out what's going on there. So by providing an integrated GUI, we can give you the ability to efficiently diagnose and monitor and troubleshoot all your remote applications running on the compute cluster. So this is the SOA programming model in terms of writing the actual code. So by creating a session, a set of resources allocated for your node. And here we're essentially saying, okay, we want a new session with the head node of the computational node as the head node, called head node. And then I also want to invoke the my service. So I created a session. And then I create a client by giving it two things. One is the actual binding. Sometimes I would just use NetTCP because it's the most efficient binary encoding or binding, and the a session endpoint. And this is the ABC we talked about earlier once again. And then we want to loop through that and asynchronously call and distribute the workout. And then finally, for these type of asynchronous calls, you always have to define a callback function or a pointer to a function or delegate, whatever you call it. And then the result is aggregated and retrieved back. And, of course, in a few minutes, I'll do an actual demo, walk you through how to create a service, create an application that uses the service, and how to deploy it. So here's a reminder of what kind of applications this is good for. And first of all, we have Monte Carlo simulations. Monte Carlo simulations are embarrassing parallel because you don't have, they're stateless. And we can also use Excel add-ons like UDF calls or user-defined function calls as an Excel plugin. You can use just that to submit calculations that are each unit contains exact same type of calculations. And BlastSearch, and for the unit of work is individual matching of genes. And finally, genetic algorithm. So this is each step or that are not dependent on each other. And then the ray tracing, in this case we're doing each pixel rendering is a unit of work. And finally, digital content creation, it could be making a movie, and each of these frames being rendered is a unit of work. So here's our build scenario. So usually what happens is that the user, the developer, wants to build an application, and you can do all of that on Visual Studio, and you can then deploy it from Visual Studio to the cluster environment by registering the service and then copying the service DLL onto the compute cluster. And then you want to take these services and give it to your sysadmins once you're ready, and the sysadmins will take them and deploy them onto the compute cluster. And finally, users would go to the actual production environment and go ahead and run the program. And this could also mean that you could have multiple users and lots of sessions running on the same thing. And there are two ways of doing the install. You can make a custom installation, or you can just do what I do, which is copy the service DLL and register the service. So here's essentially what I just talked about, and we want to do three options. One is a local deployment. You can deploy it onto the compute nodes, and they will usually have better performance. Or you can copy the files onto a file share if you don't want to do the multiple copies onto each high drive space. And or you can have an option of using a hybrid of the two. You can have some files on the file share or some of the other things on the local node to speed things up a little bit. So it really is pretty simple. As we said, you want to make sure that you set up your environment properly, and usually when you install the HPC pack, it will do it for you. And then you want to copy your service configuration file. All it's going to say in the service configuration file is where the binary DLL is and what the service types and service that it provides. It's just usually one line of code that you have to change to register your components. So we have another demo here that shows you how to build a WCF application. So I need a few seconds to set this up. I'm connecting to a remote computer here, and I will go ahead and switch that to the actual remote desktop. Ah, there we go. So on here we have a bunch of demos. The protein folding one we just showed, and I will also show another demo in a few minutes on how to use Microsoft Visual Studio and the VSTO or Visual Studio tools of Office to create a spreadsheet programmatically and call remote services. So the first one we will do is really simple, and I'll show you how to create a web service. So here we're actually showing two pieces of code. One is the client, and the other one is the web service that we created, which is the square service. It's going to do a computation of a variable multiplied by itself. And let me first show you how to create a service. It's very, very easy. So instead of saying new, I want to really say add new project here. And all I have to do is to go to web and say I want a web service application. And I just choose everything as default, and it's going to create one for me. And once I built that, and it's going to create a service, and it's going to run that. And we can go ahead and say start without, oops, that looks like we got a little minor problem. But anyway, so this is how a service is created. And the next thing you want to do is to create a client that actually talks to a service. So you can, what you can do is you can go to New Project and go to WCF application. It could be a Windows and a console application. And under console application, what you can do is add a service reference. So the nice thing about Visual Studio is that you have the discover button. Of course, our first service didn't quite work, so it won't be to find it. But what I will do here is go ahead and run the square service instead of the new service that we are creating here. I'll close this up and start the square service once again. So under the service, we'll go ahead and delete that other one that we're not going to use. So under the square service, it's very simple. The first thing you want to do is to define a contract. The contract is very easy here. All you're doing is a square a service. And this is the interface. It takes a parameter and it's an integer. And the actual implementation is very straightforward. You multiply by yourself. And the client. The client, as I was previously trying to do, is to add a service reference. So usually what you want to do is to update the service. It looks like we have a let me try to run it. Now it's running. Okay, so essentially what we're doing here is creating a service that runs locally and as well as running on the remote server. So the first thing I have to do is rebuild this. Okay, now it did succeed. So we will start without debugging. Looks like I may have to, I see what happened. I actually have two instances of the service running, so that's the problem. But this is fairly straightforward to fix. I will go ahead and run it again. Oops, still doing it. But I'll go ahead and just talk about the actual code here. So The service is pretty straightforward, and under the client implementation, we'll go to the three steps here. One is that you are creating a client on the local service by importing the service reference that we have over here, which is this Square service. And the Square service client, once you imported that, you can create a client code. The client by default, it doesn't contain any parameters. So that means you're connecting to the local host. And then you're making synchronous calls and asynchronous calls by calling it 100 times. Here is the synchronous call by calling the client.square. And the second one is by calling the calling the actual code using asynchronous calls. So here we need a callback function, as we talked about earlier in the slides, was to provide a delegate or a callback function. So, and then finally, we have a new way of doing this, which is to connect to the remote service, which is by providing a head node, a session, creating a new session information, and a what the Square service by creating a session and give it the what kind of resources we're going to use. So here we need a minimum of one core and a maximum of three cores. And then finally, by creating the session and then giving the session to the actual client to connect to, here it is. So here's the new service client. You're giving it a NetTCP binding and also a session endpoint reference. So that is pretty much it. And that allows you to connect it to the remote service locally, as well as the service on the on the compute cluster. So the only change you have to do is that. And I'm going to close this. And I'm wondering why this is not quite working. Let me close it off and try to run it again one more time. And if it doesn't work, we'll move on. We'll rebuild it. And let me see if I can refresh this. Usually this helps a lot by refreshing it. This looks like this machine is not quite working. So I'll go ahead and close that and go back to the slides here. But don't worry, we'll have another presentation that would, another demo that we will show later. So here are some performance tips. So one is that the WCF broker delivers a out-of-box for experience for very short calls, and you can keep all your calls, your services in memory. That's why it gives you very low latency messages. And the other one is to apply caution when you're sending very large messages. If you're using data cache, we could be using Velocity as another tool that we could be using to fix this problem, which is to have a distributed caching mechanism to avoid sending very large data around. And also avoid service startups on the first message. When you're sending the first message, just to set everything up and start the services. So if you, in your application, try to invoke that first, and that will basically tell you, you know, allow your second call to go very fast once everything is loaded in memory. And also we want to look at shared sessions. If you already have a session of a specific service that started, what you can do is by calling the asking whether this session already exists, and by reusing the actual endpoint. And you can just basically say, I want to reuse this session by using the exact same service. But in the next demonstration, I will show you how to filter out and discover services on the server. So this is the next demo. I will switch back to the remote desktop. Okay. So here is another very cool demo that I have here. The first one wasn't that cool. So I will open this up. And essentially, we're doing the same thing here. We need a service, and we need a client. In this case, we're using Visual Studio tools for Office and as the client. And we're using the service. Services is defined exactly the same way. And we'll look at it very quickly here. So we define the service contract. So here we're pricing a bunch of options options for security. Here are the parameters. Here's an initial value, the exercise, up and down, and where it's your intended parameter of the actual security. And the interest, the amount of interest. So options are things that are in the future. So you may have to take that into consideration. And also the period and how much it runs, how many runs you want to do. So this is the service contract. The implementation is fairly straightforward. You're taking these parameters and you're calculating the actual security. Given how many paths you want to run and how many iterations you want to run. And in the interesting thing about this demo is the actual client. The client is done using just a spreadsheet. So spreadsheets can be programmatically done using .NET. So in here we have securities that are a very simple setup here in the spreadsheet, and we want to go ahead and look at this workbook. And what you do is there's a design view and a code view. So here we're going to look at the code. So first thing you want to do is to create the session and go ahead and tell it how many cores you want. I want 16, obviously, and then the broker setting, and this is essentially saying the timeout is 12 hours. And so once you create this session, you want to farm out the actual work. So if you already have a session, so we're doing the actual filtering. So if there's already a web service running on the same node, we'll just connect to the same service. And in this spreadsheet, there's a bunch of sheets. So this is the design view of the first sheet, and we'll look at the code very quickly. In here, we have the range and where the actual computation holds. And also, for each of these, you're going to do the actual calculation by calling the client begin calculation, and it will do a service callback to update the actual client. And clear click is where you clear out the spreadsheet, and there's a run button. So let's go ahead and run this. I hope it runs a bit better this time. Let me go ahead and close this and go back and run this. So this is already compiled, and I'm just going to go click on it. And all it's going to do is going to load up everything in Office, and this is essentially our client here. Okay, so this is a Monte Carlo simulation. It's going to run it 100,000 times. Is it 1 million times? It's 1 million times. So we'll go ahead and hit run, and it's going to do the calculation. And the calculation happens on the server. So since it happens so quickly, we can't really see what actually happens on the server. But what I will do is I will go ahead and switch to the desktop and show you the service actually ran. So go back to the content and go back to the desktop. And I hope everyone can see my desktop at this time. So let me go back and close the session real quick. So now we can see the desktop. Okay, much better. So I'll go ahead and start the cluster management tool and show you that the service actually ran. So under job management, so the agent option service, as you can see, it's still running because we invoked it, and it's still running, and it submitted all these tasks, and they're all finished. and I still have one of them running, obviously. And so these tasks have been farmed out to the servers, and it's done. And now if you have another client, you can connect to the same session by filtering this out and connect to the same service, and then you don't have incur any startup costs. So let's get back to the slides. So under management, I just want to show a few things very quickly under management, how to create a broker node and how to look at the services and how to do the deployment. So here are some of the FAQs on these things, and you know, how are my sessions doing, and I want to know what's happening on the session, and the throughput. What if the throughput is low on the WCF broker node? Because everything, all your clients are going to hit the same broker node. The solution is that you can have multiple broker nodes, but each session will can only use one broker node. And then if you're having a runtime error, what are you going to do? And you can use the diagnostics tools we have. And how do you do capacity planning? And capacity planning is you can use our diagnostic tools to do a latency and also throughput test, and then plan how many broker nodes you're going to have in your framework. So I'm going to do another demo here before I go into the HPC Open Grid Forum interoperability. So under here, we're back to the management console. Under node management, you can see that I have, I can arrange things by type of node we have. The first type is a head node. Head node is you'll have for the traditional architecture as well as the new one. And there's computational node. In this case, we have three of them. And then also the WCF broker node. Just for the heck of it, I am going to take everything offline. So I'm going to go to all these nodes that are online. I'm going to take them offline. So now all of them are offline, and they're gone. And what happens is that there's a draining process, and they will take a while to drain out and stop because we already have some of the services running. So one way you can start a broker node is to right-click and change its rows. So since it's still draining, we can't do that. The row can only be changed while it's offline. So once we hit the change row button, it will allow you to configure your nodes as a broker node or a just a regular head node. So let's just go back real quick. Let me show you the go back to the slides real quick. Okay. So the final thing I want to talk about here is the HPC Open Grid Forum interoperability. So what is HP Basic Profile? HPC Basic Profile is a web service that interacts with HPC resources, and our architecture supports that. And it's very basic, but HPC Basic Profile provides additional tools like file staging and as an extension. So these things is developed through an open community process, and one of the definition language is called the job submission definition language. You can read about it, and it's many, many pages of lengthy descriptions, and it talks about directories, where the files are, where the executables are, and their arguments and resources they use. So that is supported in our tool, And that is pretty much all the content. And let me go to the resource page here. On our website, we have the www.microsoft.com/HPC, and this is our main HPC materials from the external website. And we also have Channel 9, which I want to point out to you, which has most of what I presented today on there with videos that show you how to do things in more detail. And also we have other portals and resources available for you. And I would like to thank all of you for attending this webcast. And I am ready to take any questions or you may have.
Thank you, Wenming. We have a question in the queue. How do you add multiple brokers, if I understand?
Oh, I see. That is very simple. Let me switch back to the start an application here. I'll go ahead and go back to the back to the job console. So I'm going to connect to the one of the cluster nodes, and if you give me 1 second, I will switch you to that application. So there it is. So I will go ahead and start the HPC cluster management tool. And here we have, under node management, you will see that there are two things online here. One of them is a head node, and it's also a broker node. What you can do is to take the compute node offline. Yes, I'll go ahead and take that offline. And what I will do is, once it's offline, is I right-click and say change role, and also make that as a WCF broker node. So now you can have multiple WCF broker nodes. Hi, Marty. Do we have any other questions in the queue?
I think that was the last question we have in the queue for you.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for attending the webcast. And we really appreciate your support. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. One last question just came in. If you have a moment.
Oh, yes. I have. Of course, I have time for that. Could you tell me the question, Marty?
Sure can. We have, how can Windows workflow leverage HPC? The default scheduler and manual scheduler can execute only one thread. Is there any plan to integrate WF with HPC?
I can barely hear you. I'm sorry.
Pardon me. How can the Windows workflow leverage HPC?
So first of all, Windows workflow can connect using the same job scheduler API, or using even HPC basic profile to connect to the scheduler. So that's the first part of the answer.
And then we have the default scheduler manual scheduler connects to only one thread. Is there any plan to integrate WF with HPC?
That could be in the planning, and if you shoot me an email, I would be able to talk to you about this offline.
Great.
And I can give the email out.
Yeah, you'll need to give your email then.
Okay.
You can give it out now?
Yes, I can do that. And I will, how do I actually post that? Is it under question and answers?
We could put up a...
So I put something in there.
You could put it on the whiteboard as
well,
right,
Marty? Yeah, I'm going to put that up.
We have another question.
Okay.
WCF3 included with HPC or VS?
Is WCF included with... that you have to install separately, if I understand the questions properly, is that the question is WCF... the actual .NET included. When you install the HPC pack, it will install .NET 3.5 or 3.0 or 3.5, and that includes the WCF or the Windows Foundation class in the .NET framework.
Great, thank you. Another question for reclarification, any type of client can schedule a job with the HPC service?
Yes, that is true. You can. use anything you want, really. If you want to use PowerShell, you can use PowerShell. You can use .NET. You can use Java if you want. Use Java to integrate with the job scheduler using HPC Basic Profile. In fact, we have a video of that on Channel 9. If you look at that link, it's on Channel 9, and that will show you how to do that. Pretty much all the clients should be able to talk to the job scheduler, even via comp.
So, for example, a Windows service could schedule a job?
Windows
service? Schedule a job?
Yeah, you can do that.
Thank you. I still have another question. Is it possible for one clustered service to make a call to a different clustered service on the same cluster?
Is it possible to have one cluster?
We have one clustered service to make a call to a different clustered service on the same cluster.
You can do that. If I understand the question properly, is that in your code, you can call out to multiple clusters by specifying the head node or using multiple sessions.
Thank you. That looks to be the last of the questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Wenning. As a reminder, you may now print a copy of the slides by selecting the printer icon in the context bar in the lower right portion of the client. And once again, I'd like to extend a thank you to Wenning Yi and to Phil Pennington for presenting today. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's live meeting. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.